you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. It's rare that I get to say this, although lately we're saying it more and more. Another legend on the SDR show. It's Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction, from the creator of the Lollapalooza Festival, and just an all-around rock and roll dude. Porno for Pyros, let's not forget that. Just a super talented guy. Dave Landau steps in the co-hosting ability. I will say, Big J did not quit the show. I get a lot of emails and questions about that. The bottom line is that he's a busy boy, and if I'm offered fucking Perry Farrell and Jay can't do it, I'm not going to say no. How do you say no? You want Perry Farrell. So Dave Landau comes in. It's a really good episode. Super cool dude. Can't say enough good things. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but fuck, it was fun. That's all I'm going to say. Remember, we do it every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. The main thing I care about is telling other people, spread the love, listen anywhere you listen to podcasts, or go to YouTube.com. You can watch the videos there. I never promote our YouTube page, but you could do that. The newest 15 episodes are always there, soon to be 20. But if you want to subscribe, which means you get the show immediately, maybe you're a huge Perry Farrell fan, you could have heard this 5 days ago, you don't want to hear commercials, you want it the day it comes out in HD, you want access to every show we've ever done, go to GasDigitalNetwork.com, use the code SDR. You could try it out for 7 days. You don't like it, cancel it. You won't get charged. Just that simple. But we just love doing the show and bringing it to you every single week. Here it is right now, the Perry Farrell episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show.
It is the SDR show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, Dave Landau, who moved. Wherever you are, Dave, there seems to be very sparse furniture, if not any.
No, there is. It's just kind of hidden.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
See,
now, there you go.
Nicolas Cage sequin pillow.
You know. Very nice. So now, I would tell, it's a great intro because so much of this dude is so part of the culture of America, a singer of Psycom, Jane's Addiction, Porno for Pyros, Satellite Party, Kind Heaven Orchestra, creator of Lollapalooza, born in New York City, which he just found out about that I want to talk about, but the new box set, the glitz, the glamour, it is fucking Perry Farrell. How are you, buddy? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm doing great, Ralph. It's a good day.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, I used to have the Porno for Pyros poster in my room from your first album in 93. So I'm going to completely fangirl out here. I was 11.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's really cool. And also, I like, by the way, is it a true on purpose that there's 69 tracks on the box set? Is that done on purpose?
Yeah, it's one of those mystical numbers.
Magic happens.
Right. Yeah.
I'll allow it. And what's cool about it is that, and correct me, feel free to correct me if ever I'm wrong on any of this, but you are focusing on all the stuff that you've been a part of outside of Jane's Addiction, because Jane's is covered enough everywhere else in the world. This is all the great music that you've done without that band.
That's right.
All right. So, and a lot of it is stuff that you dug up and found and put together and just created this incredible box set. Great artist, Zoltar, does some beautiful lithographs. I mean, it's really well thought out. The thing I want to first ask you, this is right. It seems like you're thrilled about the way technology is allowing you these days to go straight to fans, screw record labels or whatever, not necessarily right, but you have like complete control over this, which as an artist like yourself, you don't always get.
Right.
Well, it wasn't the case 20 years ago, let's just say. But I came into the pandemic having done a record on BMG and with, I would say, mediocre success, because they were doing, you know, they were promoting it the old-fashioned way you promote records.
Mm-hmm.
you know, going to a radio station and seeing if they would play it. It's just like, all right, nothing against PMG. They're great people. I mean, I love the people that work there. But when I came out of it, I was just done with dealing with labels, and my management team has an in with Last Man Records there out of the UK. Basically, to simplify the conversation, all my music is now intellectual property. Mm-hmm. I own it.
That's great.
That's how I'm going forward. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't work with a record label. I plan to work with a label going forward just to distribute their distribution and their promotion.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good things still with some labels. I'm going to be speaking with them in the next year. But for the most part, man, I'm at a point in my career where I don't really need to rely on them.
Right, which is a great place to be in.
Yeah, because there's all these pods in the music industry. You know, there's cats that are super interested in the Grammys, and then other ones that are super interested in the Hall of Fame. And then there's my pod, which is, you know, we're super interested in the underground and live entertainment. And that's where I hang, you know. Mm-hmm. I hang with people that, you know, it goes into dance music, electronic music, and those realms where, you know, these great parties are put on. And mm-hmm. of course the center, the root of it all is music, you know, dance music or rock music, just exciting music. And now I'm building an orchestra, which,
wow.
Yeah. So my latest project is the Kind Heaven Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And it was, I was inspired by the jazz musicians of the 1940s. I just thought they were just amazing, you know, Bird and Count Basie and Duke Ellington. My dad's generation back in New York and Bensonhurst.
Right. Sure.
But you grew up in Queens or in Bensonhurst?
I was born in Queens. My dad got his first house in Queens. My dad was 47th Street. Diamond District jeweler.
Wow. So you know, we're fellow Jews, by the way, because I'm 51, grew up in Brooklyn myself.
Yeah.
And I have questions about that too, but I don't want to interrupt. Continue.
I just look Jewish.
You just look Jewish.
That's it.
So my dad's generation, my dad, you know, served World War II. He fought, was stationed in Hawaii. So it was kind of a sexy, setup he had gone, but of course, you know, World War II was not sexy. Yeah. But prior to that time, he would go out, and he was a zoot suiter. So he'd that's go cool. out with the zoot
suit. Oh, that's suit, awesome.
You know, Cab Calloway and all those cats, and
that's
go
so cool.
And I loved that period. So I started, you know, to read books about that period, jazz, you know, the origination of jazz. Coming out of Kansas City and then moving, you know, all across to New York and Harlem. And I just thought,
yeah, the Cotton Club and all those places. Yeah, it's really cool.
I just thought, you know, that's for me, that's where I want to be. I mean, rock is wonderful. And I, you know, I still get to work with James and Porno, but we can do anything as an orchestra. You know, you have strings at your disposal. You have strings here and you've got horns there and you've got guitars and drums, right, and then programming. So it's a very, very modern orchestra because it deals a lot with electronics. And something I wanted to discuss with you, I mixed my last album in stereo as most everybody does today, but I also took a step further, and I mixed it in Atmos 7.2 surround sound. Mm-hmm. This is the future of music, because I was prepping for you, Ralph, and they said that you're going to ask me about the future of music as we come out of this pandemic. Yes. What's it going to look like? What's it going to sound like? So I'm here to tell you that the sound of it is going to change. It's going to evolve. I took the time and the effort to mix it in surround sound, because that's the sound that you hear when you go into movie theaters. It was amazing, right? You sit in a movie theater and you'd have explosions coming from behind your head, or people marching across, and it really excited and enhanced the experience, mm-hmm. right? Watching the movie. Well, I feel that the future of music is in live entertainment, and recording is going to be in surround sound. So the box set is included the album Kind Heaven, but it also includes a surround sound mix. So if you have a home entertainment system, like a, you know, some of these cats have these movie centers.
Yeah, at least it had like one of those 5-point surround sound systems, right, that you would have for television.
You can play it and it will kick your ass.
Because it sounds like, if I'm not mistaken, what that stuff is, it's like where you feel like you're in a certain part, like you're by the sound booth.
You're immersed in a concert.
Yeah,
no, it's a very better than that. You're immersed. You're in the middle of this environment. That's sound is beautiful. Sound is going on all around you. And for me, a cat who just fell in love with dub, you know, a la Mad Professor and Lee Scratch Perry, you know, the old dub, Jamaican dub reggae artists. I took that concept of dub and I applied it to Jane's Addiction. You'll hear lots of looping, you know, vocal mm-hmm. looping, that's dubbing, you know, basically it's taking delays, bop, 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 you know?
Right.
And I put a hold on the delays to create vocal loops, vocal sound loops. And then in the mix, I fly those loops around. So you really feel like there's almost like an angelic realm above your head, just singing parts and string sections coming out over there. And then, you know, the drums will come marching down the center of your head, stomp right over your face.
And you don't need some sort of special audio device. Just as long as you have a surround sound system, it right. can experience that. It's not right. like you need to buy something new.
No, you do. You do.
You do.
You do if you only have a stereo system. It will work fine.
No, but I mean, if you have a surround sound system, which yeah, I think most people these days in their homes probably have something like that with a subwoofer and satellite speakers and whatnot.
Well, it's getting there. So now all the speaker companies are working on it. You know, Dolby, I went to Dolby Studios, which is where the movie people go.
Yeah.
To get it done. And then to take it a step further, and we can probably talk about something else after this, but I took it even an extra step further than that, or I'm going to release the stems. So stems are basically when you mix, mm-hmm. just think of like my voice is one stem, mm-hmm. background vocals, another stem, drums are stem, guitar stem, you know, strings are stems. So you can take those stems, if I gave them out to the public through one of the better electronic music companies. Like
distribution channels of some sort, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Like there's companies that are way more into electronic music than analog. It's where the DJs all go. Mm-hmm. So I plan to sometime later in the, maybe within the year, release some of the stems from that so that people can start mixing me.
That's pretty wild. And then they can create their own mixes of your music. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, but it's killer because it surrounds down stems.
Right. It's more than just like giving you individual channels. You're giving the actual surround sound stem, as you call it, which allows them to not only choose how much or how little of something is, but where it's coming from. That's crazy.
I like, because I think it is one of those things of the past too, like almost live entertainment was getting to be. And I think you're right that that's going to come back. The idea of surround sound and the idea of people wanting to go out more than they used to. I really do see the past becoming the future. Yeah, I really do. I really think people are going to, I think you can already tell people have a respect for live entertainment that's been gone for a while before the pandemic.
What I want to do, Perry, by the way, is my side project, Brilliant $1 Billion Idea. I wanted to have a website called I Was There, right? So everybody that goes to the same show that all recorded their same crappy video footage, you all put it up on a website, and then you can make your own multi-camera mix from every different section of the studio and release it as your own little video. I think that'd do really well. It's my idea.
I agree.
Feel free to steal it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, but so one thing that's interesting, you know, in listening to you speak, and it's a funny quantification, is that there are artists and there are musicians. Some are both, obviously, but like I would experience, and I say, I hate to shit on this because I love the band, but either you are The Doors or you're Kiss, right? So one is an artist and one is a musician. I'm not saying that I am shitting on Kiss because I love Kiss.
Kiss but being the artist?
Kiss being...
I'd bring in another word that would be poet.
Poet. Okay, I give that.
Some are poets and some are not.
Right, exactly.
Some rock and roll all night and party every day doesn't compare.
It doesn't resonate the same way. Right. It doesn't resonate the same way.
my 6-year-old loves it. I'm not even kidding.
But it just it's an interesting thing. Like, you're not only still putting out music, you're also trying to push the medium further. Which I mean, who? Not many people still want to do that. So it's great to show how ensconced you are in this as art, as opposed to just music. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, the reason being is, you know, through Lollapalooza, through performing live, being alive. Artist and promoter. So in the promotion game, take off the singer's hat, put on the promoter's hat, I'm always looking to create better parties.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that we could go out and have the sound, you know, we're immersed in the sound. For me, as a musician, as like I say, I dub. So I just can't wait to be, I could even go to the DJ station and DJ these records.
That's great. Town.
So, you know, you'll be dancing and just things will be flying around the room. It is a different, unique experience that the world hasn't really felt yet.
Have that's you always well. Had an interest in that, in like that sort of electronic music, or has it been more recent for you?
Yeah. I started loving electronic music around 1990, 91, when Jane's Addiction went to the UK on tour. And I was given records. The records were The Orb and Orbital and Future Sounds of London.
I remember that record.
Yeah. And I just, you know, as a musician, listening to that, it was so fresh and alien to what we were doing. Of course, we were analog, but we were doing through dub electronics and, you know, electric guitar, electric bass, but not much electric drum. And that is the marked difference of electronic music, is the drumming. No. You know, they start out with the beats and the drums and the subs. They can get, you know, so deep. The subs can go so deep and so wide with the electronics.
Well, I imagine at the time, sorry.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Jay.
Well, I want to be able to work with those materials, which is, you know, it's sound materials, but I wanted to work with those materials so badly because it was like opening up the door to the universe of music. Because you were getting things, and also you were getting patterns that you can create an algorithm, you know, things start to filter and change. And it was artificially intelligent, the machinery and the software. So I got really into it and started to think, how can I get this into the music while still maintaining analog, because I, you know, through experimentation, I come to find that we need each other. Like the world needs to hear people singing, right. Real, you know, their stories and how they felt about it. And they really need to hear it coming out of a human being rather than a machine, because we're flesh and blood. We're life, and a machine can't replace a human being in a marriage and in music.
That's well, just, in a marriage, at least not yet, but maybe one day. I don't know.
Part of a man.
It won't happen because the soul.
Right. No, you're right. No, I'm just kidding. Let me ask you this. So you touched on this a little bit, Perry. You mentioned promoter hat, right? So yeah. I never thought I'd get the chance to ask this to you. So we are on a conversation. I will. Obviously, I looked it up, and the concert for Bangladesh with George Harrison was your motivation years ago for Lollapalooza, right? And that was where part of the idea. Yeah. So it's a two-part question. Knowing that you grew up in New York City, right? Yeah. And the only place that Carvel exists, to my opinion, is New York City.
Yeah.
Did you get the name of
Lollapalooza? No. Incorrect. There's one out here in L.A.
Is there?
Carvel cake every time for my birthday.
Okay. But there did you get the name of Lollapalooza from the Lollapalooza ice cream?
No, I didn't. I might have gotten it from the Three Stooges.
From the Three Stooges.
I do remember one time they said, Lollapalooza! Like that. No. But I got it by, you know, back in the, this was probably 1990. Mm-hmm. I was reading a dictionary. I used to like to read the dictionary because as a poet, I'm always looking for interesting words.
Fair.
Sometimes I throw them in just because I feel that music should be in part something that is, you can relate to and you know already. It is kind of relative, but the great music always throws surprises and things that you don't know, and that causes you to want to know it. Mm-hmm. So that's why you play it over and over again, because you're trying to understand it and you're trying to get to know it better. So I'd read the dictionary to get words for my poetry, and there it was, a Lollapalooza, something and or someone great and or wonderful. And then the second description was a giant swirling lollipop.
Oh, really?
Really? I didn't even know it was a real word until just now.
I know it from the Carvel had the Lollapalooza.
I know.
And they also had a Mamapalooza and a Papapalooza. I just remember that as a kid. I always wondered that because I mean, I didn't know I'd get to talk to you 30, 25 years later, but it's great to finally get that actual answer. But then the second part of that question, it's kind of weird that this has happened. So if there's a political scandal in the world, right, they throw the word gate at the end of it. It's Obamagate. It's blah, blah, gate, whatever. So now every rinky-dink festival in the universe throws on palooza at the end of their word. Like it's the dog-a-palooza, the model-palooza, whatever. Do you get pride out of that, or do you get annoyed that they bastardized your creation?
Well, the last time I saw them do that was when Trump went to speak at his like Nazi decorated, the last thing he did, and they called it a Lollapalooza. Lollapalooza. So I kind of got a kick out of that.
Well, that one I could get it. You could enjoy that one. You're allowed to enjoy that one.
What used to happen was of course we have lawyers always watching, protect the name, right? Mm-hmm. And every week there'd be some new palooza thing that they wanted me to, you know, sign off on to shut down.
Right.
And I finally said, you know, look, I'm giving you so much fucking money to shut down these tiny little things. Who cares if Betty has a birthday and she wants to call it Betty Palooza? I don't give a shit.
That's good.
Kind of nice, you know, I kind of like it because it means that they like what I did enough to go on a bite off of it. I just said leave people alone.
You basically created a thing that's going to be used forever. I think it's kind of wild.
Yeah, it wasn't Weird Al the first one anyway. It was like Jurassic-a-palooza or whatever right after.
It was. I think Homer Simpson did some Homer Palooza.
Oh, it might have been Homer Palooza. So yeah, when he went to
that
Rock.
So great. That's awesome. So to go back to the box set for a second again, the glitz and the glamour. I know there was a song years ago with Satellite Party where you had Jim Morrison spoken word. And now there's another one on the record, which I've not heard yet. But the story, I heard it already, but not everyone has. How you got access to this is crazy.
Well, right. So, yeah, it is pretty wild. Might have been 10 years ago, something like that. Just cold call from Israel. This man and a woman called and said that they had tracks of Jim Morrison singing and doing spoken word, and that Jim wanted me to have these tracks. I said, well, all right. You're telling me that Jim Morrison, you speak with Jim Morrison? They said, well, yes. I said, well, why does he think that I was just checking bait. I'm like, why does he think that I should have these tracks? And when are you going to speak with them next? And they were whispering to each other, like, then I'd hear a woman's voice. And they were, apparently, I guess she was maybe she's a medium. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's alive. I never met them. I still have never met them, but they sent me the tracks. And when I got the tracks, of course, I had to go to management of the Doors,
right?
Who were also there. They owned, they ran the estate for the Morrison family,
mm-hmm.
because none of us were going to be able to use these tracks without getting clearance from them.
Right.
They told, this is sad. They told the Israelis that they couldn't use it, give it all right away, and then they let me use it.
Wow.
Rather than. Yeah, but I kind of feel bad about that because they gave it, like Jim gave it to me, and now I ripped it out of their hands.
But if you want to look at it, on a grand scale, they said Jim wanted you to have it. So yeah, then, exactly. Technically that's fine.
So what I'm doing with the tracks is I had a remix done by a Palestinian woman and a Jewish man of the song. Mm-hmm. The song is called Vast Visitation. And there's another one called Woman in the Window. And at the end of Woman in the Window, the chorus is, just try and stop us, we're going to love. Just try and stop us, we're going to love. But the final verse, he says, open your window, woman of Palestine. Throw down your raiment and cover us over. So there's a big word for you, raiment.
That's a good word.
Jim Morrison had big words. So I guess that's probably where I got started, reading the dictionary for my songs. But anyway, I wanted to take the songs and use it for good. Since Jim wanted me to have it, I thought, let's go for broke here. I want the songs to be the start of a peace between the Palestinians and the Israelis.
That's a nice way to look at it. Do they know they're collaborating, the Israeli and the Palestinian? All right, that's good to know. That's nice.
Yeah, and then, but I want to take
it's good to let them know.
I want to go there, and I want to do a party. And I want to do, two parties, one in Israel and one in Palestine. And I want to get those musicians, and I'll bring my orchestra and some other friends. And then I want us all to sit down. Because musicians, We don't have hang-ups about other people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that guy who sings Sweet Poutine. He's hung up. But the rest of us, what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The guy, he's always like fucking shooting animals with a...
Yeah, I know you're talking about. Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent,
right.
Ted Nugent.
He seems a little hung up to me, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I never met him, but my point is really that musicians, if you can play and you can sing, well, we love you.
It's the grand equalizer for most people that, you know, you can always find a commonality because you have that shared love of something bigger than all of us.
Heck yeah. And music is a universal language. Like, I don't need to know how to speak your language if you're Palestinian, but I hear your music and I get you. So that's what we're doing with the songs. And
it's a beautiful concept to do that. I mean, not only are you looking at the song, but you're looking, stepping back and saying, maybe this could lead to bigger things, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I so love and honor Jim Morrison and the Doors that that's where I think it belongs.
Can I ask you this? Did you think, I'm going to ask you one quick question on the Jim Morrison. Okay. Did you think it was bullshit until the recording showed up?
Well, only reason I was interested and didn't think it was total bullshit is because Jim Morrison was known to, when he left Los Angeles, Danny Sugarman, who was the manager at the time, he passed on like 2 weeks after I played him the music.
Mm-hmm.
He said to me that Jim went up to Sunset Boulevard like the night before he left for Paris. And he said, that must be where he recorded this stuff. But it wasn't that recording. He did that recording, and there was, there are some poems that they produced of that particular session, but this is not that session.
That's crazy.
I went on to find out that he had a lover who was Palestinian.
Wow. So
I found that out about a year ago.
That's crazy.
That's why I'm real determined to go there and hang.
It seems destined.
I just want, man, listen, those cats have been fighting for 5,000 years. Is that bizarre?
It's insane. It really is amazing.
For 5,000 years. And I just feel like I'm alive and I just don't accept it. I don't accept this bullshit. I think there's got to be peace. There's got to be a way to peace. I mean, we're living in different times. I find these times to be amazing. Honestly, I mean, I know there's COVID out there and there's crazy fascists and everything else, but I think it's going away, all of it. I think we're heading towards peace.
This time made us all very introspective, having to be alone with your thoughts for weeks or months on end. You start looking and analyzing things like, maybe that wasn't as important as I thought it was.
Yeah. I think true moderates are definitely the majority, and that's the people that kind of want the peace anyway. And I think that's really way more out there than we really think, because both sides get they get all the attention.
Right.
So I definitely think you're onto something.
All right, before we go any further, what can I tell you other than I love this sponsor? It is YoKratom, YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. No more overpaying at a crappy gas station quality kratom or corner store. You don't know how long it's been sitting on the shelves. You don't even know what's in it. This is high quality, but wholesale, curated and created at YoKratom and sent directly to you at incredibly low prices, $60 a kilo. You could spend as much as $120 sometimes, and it's garbage. Shannon recently told me a story that she ran out of the YoKratom. She wanted to get something, so she went to a store, opened it up, looked at it after she took it home. She's like, oh my God, I can't have this. It looks like there's something wrong with it. And she threw it out. You're not going to get that if you go to YoKratom. YoKratom.com. It is the biggest kratom wholesaler. They have the best quality prices, $60 a kilo. You cannot go wrong. So if you're a fan of Kratom, this is the place for you. They're sponsoring the show. They sponsor most of the network. So support the sponsors that support us. The $60 kilo at YoKratom.com. All right, let's get back into it. I want to hit through a couple of quick things because we don't have all the time in the world with you. I mean, I would love to talk with you for 2 days, but we can't do that. First of all, I know your birthday just passed, so happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Like a week or so ago. The thing that surprised the hell out of me, and maybe this is wrong, did you not actually think of yourself to be a professional singer? You didn't even think about going down that path until you were 21?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, I was a runaway, so I was just kind of treading water, you know, doggy paddling through life. I don't know what the fuck's going to happen to me. I didn't have time to think like, oh, I'm going to be a rock star, you know?
Right.
Yeah, you were living in your car out in L.A., weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a big Buick Regal and had a great back seat.
I love those cars.
I had a girlfriend. She lived in it with me.
Wow. So
I cramped and we got into fights.
Well, I imagine you're right on top of each other. And also, I know you had your neck surgery recently last year. I think it was. You're fully healed. Good.
Not fully, but man, I feel a lot better. I had two vertebrae crushed discs. They were discs. Ooh. Two discs crushed from, you know, putting my neck back and heaving out notes. Because that's how you get your notes. It's kind of like you're a saxophone and you put your neck in this position. Like that, you know, it's how you punch.
So you're like 80% you feel at this point?
Yeah.
That's great.
I'm ready to rock. I'm going out there. As soon as, you know, I'm looking at, I'll tell you the inside scoop, man. We're looking for August. I know the White House is looking for July. So I'm going to even go behind them and I'll say, please God, you know, August.
I read that you're thinking about for August to do with your orchestra and bring on different people from all the groups you've been in and make it like a really big thing.
Yeah, that's what I like to do. I like to, my friends and my family and my, you know, the cats that were in my group, you know, all the groups, try to get whoever's around in town at the time. And then I'd love to see Lollapalooza happen, but that is, it's really up to people. You know, right. That's the thing. It's really up to us right now whether we can get out there and enjoy ourselves again, or we're going to continue to be knuckleheads and dispute what is so obvious. You know what they need to do, Ralph? They need to show more patients in the wards that have COVID.
They used to do that. They stopped doing that. I have this, by the way. I don't know if you can see it. I got my fully vaccinated.
You have your passport.
Yeah, I'm fully vaccinated for a while now, thank God. It really is, how should I say it? Like, you feel a sense of peace once you know that you passed the 10 days after that second shot.
I'm,
you know,
too young.
Yeah, are you? No, it's 16 and over now, for God's sake.
Hang in there.
It's pretty wild.
Your time is coming real soon.
I got to get it.
So, with relation to the glitz and the glamour again, because there's so many unique things on this 69 track set, and as I said, the artwork with Zoltan, was there something really shocking that you found to put on? And was there something that you said, I can't include that, that's not up to snuff? You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, everything I've ever done, I've put my heart and soul into it, to the point that I literally at the end of the process, they'll have to tear me out of the studio and I'll be screaming, it's not finished. But, you know, every record that I did, my solo projects, I took 3 years or more to complete them.
Wow.
Yeah. Because not only did I have an analog to consider, like live players and getting their parts right, having them recorded beautifully, and the songs themselves have to be wonderful and the stories has to be compelling. But as I say, I produce in a beautiful hybrid where I include electronics, mm-hmm, and the binary, and the digital sounds to go and complement and enhance the analog. So as an example, Song Yet to Be Sung was my first time producing using digital. And I wrote every drum note.
Wow.
Go back and listen to it. So a lot of it's drum and bass, but every note I wrote digitally.
Wow, so that's crazy.
It took me a long time. But, you know, I feel that these days, art and architecture, if you look at the houses that are being built, you know, I love to go on walks. I don't know. You like walking?
You know what, by the way, let me say this. As a New Yorker, I love to walk. And I think it's part of the New York DNA. Yeah. I was in California right before the pandemic, walking down
in Los Angeles, the cop pulled over and said, is everything okay? Because nobody walks in Los Angeles. They thought I was crazy.
I walk in my neighborhood. Uh-huh. And especially since the pandemic, but I walked before the pandemic.
I also run, by the way. I run about 20 miles a week, too.
Oh, wow. I do, too. I'm from Detroit. We run.
Awesome. So you're down with getting out and taking at least an hour.
For sure. Day.
And what I like to do, aside from looking at, I like to study trees. Like a beautiful tree gets me off. Really does. You ever look up at a tree and you just go, man.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. So I do another show, right? My other show is about health and wellness, and it's called Good Sugar. And I do that with the founder of the biggest raw vegan. I'm not vegan, but he's the biggest raw vegan brand in New York called Juice Press. There's 90 locations. And he has been really, the whole concept of the show is trying to make me a better person. And one of the things I've been doing is every day going out for a walk and trying to reconnect with nature, because he feels that that is something that has been lost on humanity. And yeah, you feel an inner peace when you reconnect with nature.
Yeah, walking and your feet are connected to the earth. I just love the act of walking and looking for birds. I'm on the lookout always for hawks and hummingbirds, any type of bird really, but and also massive trees and architecture. So I love to study houses and people's homes and their landscapes. And why am I telling you all this? Oh yeah, because if you look at the way architects have built homes in the last, 20, 30 years, everything is just like box.
It's cheap. You can punch through it.
The materials that they use, the aesthetic, it's what it is. It's they're building a home, trying to get it in under budget so that, they use cheaper materials. There's no curves. It's everything's square.
And everything's predefined designs. They're not trying to create something that's going to inspire anybody. No. They just want to get it up.
Right. And so I can say the same thing for music. There's production technique going around these days in the music industry. It's pretty much they get the same guys producing songs. And they use the same alchemy, if you will, mm-hmm. the same chord structure to get it on a radio.
Right.
And it's fucking boring and it's cheap as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I take a long time to build my songs, but I like to look at them like great architecture. Like, check that out.
That was, by the way, a friend of my family who passed away a few years ago, who was the reason that Soho became Soho and South Beach became South Beach, because he would believe his philosophy is when you walk down a neighborhood street, look up, don't look down. Because if you see beautiful architecture, that's a neighborhood that could be something. Mm-hmm. And he was right with he was a super successful developer.
And trailer parks have wonderful architecture.
Hey, they have a potential.
Some do.
Joe's tiny houses.
Yeah, it's awesome. Joe's
tiny houses.
Yeah, that's true.
It's got nothing to do with money. Well, it's got something to do with money, but really it has to do with your desire to make great art, and you won't stop. Nothing can stop you. And that's what I want to see from the artists that are coming to play Lollapalooza. And it doesn't mean also, by the way, I just want to mention this, doesn't mean you can't throw a quick song in the mix, like a song that didn't take that long. It was, you were just inspired right then and there. A song that's like John Lennon did, so this is Christmas, and you had all these people show up and they did it right then and there. And that was wonderful. That goes in there too, but you still need, George Martin. You still need that mentality of I'm going to produce this thing and it's going to be like Leonard Bernstein.
Yeah, I like that you compare it to architecture, because when you look at the lasting lasting architecture, stuff that was built in the 1600s, 1700s, it's still around and it's still beautiful. Even stuff that's been burned to the ground still has the casings of when it was once there, you know? So I think
that's it. The world's of like, course. You can't tear that down.
Right. Because it matters to people. And right. With new stuff, you can see something that was built in 1998 be completely leveled today because there was no soul put into it.
With no emotional repercussion whatsoever.
Absolutely none. No one cares.
Yeah. And
there's a chance that some murderer actually lived in there, so they want the house demolished. So
right. That's true.
Remember, yeah. Right? Like OJ's house.
And you know what's funny when you say about there's that group, the Hit Factory people, they write all the hits for, you know, the pop hits and whatnot. Sure. I was having an argument with someone once about it, and they're saying it's not true. And I said, look, there are four songs on the radio by 20-year-old girls that all are talking about Mick Jagger being sexy. What 20-year-old girls think about an 80-year-old guy? These are older people writing these things. And like they talk about lighting up lighters. No 20-year-old girl lights a lighter. They hang their cell phone. So it's just showing you these are being written by other people, not these 20-year-old girls. It's just not.
Yeah, it's amazing how many Ramones fans are out there that are 20 years old. And I'm like, there's no way. You just got that shirt.
My son. My son is a young musician. Yeah.
He's 21, right? Your son?
He's 19.
19? Okay.
Yeah, just turned 19. So he was first mad about the Ramones. Like, just loved the Ramones. I would tell him stories. I toured with the Ramones, you know, was one of my first tours was the Ramones.
Oh, wow.
So he had to know all about Dee because he loves bass. He plays all instruments now, but he loves bass. So what was Dee Dee like? And I want to tell him, like, Dee Dee didn't have many friends when I hung out with him. Like, yeah. I hung out with him on his birthday, and I ordered him a pizza in my room. We were staying at a Holiday Inn, and he kept on waiting for this girl to come who never came. So just to give him a happy birthday, I lit off some fireworks. We shot him into a tree. And the tree caught on fire and the fire department came out. So I gave him a pretty good birthday. Other than that, I told him recently a story that Dee Dee liked to, I heard that Dee Dee liked to use toilet water when he would shoot up. He sit in the stall and use the toilet. And I once did that because I too was a huge Ramones fan. I thought they were so cool. And I had the occasion to actually use toilet water once while shooting up. I admitted that to my son. He went, "Oh, what the fuck would you do that for?" And I go, "Because I was stupid, you know."
Dad, what the fuck is wrong with you, Dad? Is that the same son that you wrote "Unconditional Love" with? That song you're working on, is that him? Or I know you have two kids.
Yeah, no, they're both playing music now.
But I know I read that you wrote a song called "Unconditional Love" with one of your sons.
Right, right. We're writing all the time, but he's almost ready to record. Not quite.
Okay, fair enough.
He's really good, man. I like dig his grooves.
That's great.
Honesty, though. That's good that you're being honest and helping him build. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's cool that he's got the talent. And yeah, it's a way better story to burn down a tree than shoot up toilet water. Can you imagine?
You said the reason you didn't want to write an autobiography is because you didn't want your sons to hear those stories, but you're telling them anyway.
Well, yeah, because he loved Dee Dee. You know, I was like, I can tell you shit about Dee Dee.
I like that it sounds like he was so pleasant. That was the best story you could think of about him. Him and Phil Spector working together had to be a good time for everyone else involved.
Oh, shit. Oh, so speaking of Phil Spector, so we have a song coming out. He's a Rebel.
Yeah.
It's a Phil Spector song.
Sure, yeah.
I'm taking like a year to finish this thing, but
the Wall of Sound is amazing. I don't care what anybody says. He's a terrible man, but what he invented is amazing.
Well, that's a great, you people that can separate the art and the artist. You should be able to do that. Some people can't, but you should be able to do that.
What he did is just amazing.
I don't agree with, look, he was definitely had to been spiced up on cocaine, right?
Oh yeah.
And paranoid to the gills. And then just thinking this lady, she's a spy or a cop. Who knows?
Trying to get his wigs.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you going to release that song that's coming out this year?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
He's a
great.
Rebel.
That's awesome.
And I changed the lyrics a little bit so that Because back in the 60s, when the song was written, it, you know, the polite pop song way to write it is, you know, he's not a rebel. You know, he's mine. He's a good man, really.
Yeah.
So I had Etsy singing, and I had her, I changed the lyric to say, like, you know, yeah, he's a rebel. He's my rebel. You know, like being a rebel is a good thing.
It's a good thing. I like
Did
that.
Did Ronnie Spector sing it originally?
No. Darlene Love.
That's who it was. Darlene Love. Yeah, that's right. Because she did the Christmas song too. That's really like when you go back to Christmas stuff.
Yeah. Darlene Love was incredible.
Amazing. Yeah.
Of course, Ronnie Spector was incredible.
Yeah. The Ronettes were amazing. I mean, that's why I always confuse those two though, because they didn't look the same at all, but their voices had a little similarity.
You know what, by the way, Perry, you touched on your wife a little bit, and you two put up a lot of Instagram stuff together. And one thing that really made me laugh the other day, she showed the album cover for Satellite Party, and she mentioned something to you, and you said, oh, I forgot about that. And she says, I remember everything. And you went, I know.
Yeah. women have that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's a reflex so that they can go, I'm going to remember this and I'm going to drop it on you, man. Just wait, you know, because they're real mental.
Right. By the way, with Satellite Party, I fucking love the song that the Bee Gees wrote with you. I think they wrote it, right? That song is awesome.
Mr. Sunshine.
Mr. Sunshine. Yeah, it was such a great song. And then Nuno Bettencourt obviously did that record with you. And then a friend of the show that I've known forever, Nick Perry, was your touring guitarist for a while, who I love that dude. He's one of the coolest guys in the world.
Nick?
Yeah.
Perry, yeah. He was amazing.
He's a great dude. There.
He went on to try to work with his sister. His sister had a song or two.
Major hits, her sister.
That were major hits.
He was in Silvertide, Silvertide was a great band as well.
So he would tell me that he wanted to be like, I hope he won't get mad at me, but the Carpenters, he goes, I want to be like the Carpenters. I want to be in a band with my sister.
That's cool though. That's nice.
It's blood is thicker than water. So go ahead, man.
Yeah, I like. Now the last thing I'm going to bring up, and then obviously, Dave, you have any other lasting questions, and then we'll wrap it up. The thing that I found amazing that I never thought was true is that the opening line of "Been Caught Stealing" is true. You were arrested for stealing when you were five, which is hilarious. And you tell the story about which we all played in Brooklyn, stickball with the pinkies. That was a big thing for me. Yeah, those were big for me. And the dog was your dog.
Yeah, but why don't they make those anymore?
Yeah, I can't find them. You can find them. They are in some of the dollar stores in Brooklyn.
You know what's the closest thing is a racquetball ball. You know, like racquetball?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A racquetball? They kind of have a similar jump to them, right?
There was a smell that the pinky had that was very unique. It was very different. You know, that really, it's so weird. And also, I was a DJ at Limelight during that heyday of 1990. Hey,
put that in your list of things that you're going to make.
Pinky. But I used to play the Been Caught Stealing all the time at Limelight. I was a DJ at the chapel at Limelight back in the day. And boy, that song was incredible for us.
Thanks, man.
And then I'm going to wrap. We have to wrap up with the first. But before I do, Dave, you have any other questions?
Yeah, I do. I know that you, with your mom and your connection to Chris Cornell and stuff, is there anything on your new album that kind of touches on suicide prevention with your addiction and depression and that sort of a thing? Do you ever partake in talking about that or raising money to that?
You know, I work sometimes with Music Cares here in LA.
Yeah.
And I've done work in New York with Road Repair, something like, I think they were called Road Repair.
Okay.
I thought they were to fix the roads in New York.
Yeah, construction. Those people don't exist.
Yeah. No, it ended up to be children that were compromised by having parents that were junkies or whatever. You know, they just couldn't raise children. So they went to this place. Road Recovery, I'm sorry. Not
yes.
Road Recovery. But I could absolutely see doing more work with, young people that consider suicide because I had, you point out, I had my mother committed suicide when I was very young.
Right. And you touch on her and mention her in Mountain Song, right? That's
you have a couple songs, and what was the
few songs?
Yeah, there's a few songs. Was,
Then She Did.
Then She Did was the one I was thinking. Yeah,
my mother taking her life, and also my girlfriend, who died of a drug overdose. I speak about her at the beginning of the song, but the this last album, Kind Heaven, the song, More Than I Can Bear, it speaks about, now, so this is something heavy, guys, but I'll hope you believe me. It's a strange story, but it's true. So my mother spoke to me in 1994. She came back and spoke to me through a person that I was sleeping with. So the young lady sat up and spoke to me, but it was my mother's voice. And wow. you know a Brooklyn accent. She said, "It's your mother. I'm looking right Jesus. At you.
Jesus.
If you could see me, you'd know you was mine. You look like your father, but if you could see me, you'd know you was mine." And she spoke to me for a few minutes.
Wow.
And I asked her why she committed suicide. And she told me she was desperate. She started to cry and she said, "I was desperate." So I wrote the song More Than I Could Bear. It was more and more than I could bear. And I tell the story of my mother, you know, my father leaving, you know, not loving her anymore is basically what it boiled down to.
Wow.
But so with Kind Heaven, one of the angles I'm taking on it is not only am I making music, but I'm also doing, you know, charitable work for the world.
It right. doesn't
have to be only suicide. It could be the environment.
Oh, sure.
The Middle East, you know, but we're taking proceeds in part, and we're doing good things with, you know, with whoever we're working with or the regions that we go into.
That's yeah, great. And I ask because I'm, you know, I'm in recovery myself, and I have many similarities as well that you just spoke about. And I guess with the pandemic, people constantly ask me, like, what do you have to say to people in recovery? Because I imagine they're pretty fragile right now. So that's why I was curious if anything was on your album, because I know if I would have gotten sober a year ago, I wouldn't have lasted.
Really?
I don't think I would have made it. No, not during a pandemic. Too much isolation.
Anything, man. Yeah. It's harder than anything in history because of fentanyl.
Oh, 100%. Absolutely.
Fentanyl,
it kills a casual user.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've kicked. Like, I seriously can't count. I didn't count in my life, but I would guarantee you that I've kicked close to 50 to 100 times.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. But when I got on, what they do nowadays is they cut everything with fentanyl.
Yep.
So if you get into it, you use fentanyl or a fentanyl derivative product, like they put it in Coke, they put it in ecstasy,
oh, yeah.
they put it in everything because it makes the casual user come back. Next thing you know, it's Monday and you got to go to work and you got to re-up. So it's the worst time to be using dope. And on top of all that, if I can talk to the spiritual aspects, the karmic aspects of it, what the blood that spilt to get it to you, I just was done. I was just done with it. You know, I would love to party, and I do love to party. And I'm not saying I wouldn't on my birthday party, you know, probably would, but you know, it's good. It's a good idea to stay away from it, man, and get into other shit that's productive. That'll, you know, fall in love.
By the way, one of the best things you can do as who you are, openly talking about it and reaching people that hear your experience through it, and they could find strength through what you've been through, is always a good thing.
That would be amazing. I don't want to be a preacher about it.
Right.
I want to be a brother.
I noticed, by the way, the way you, in watching your Instagrams and interviews with you and stuff, you're a very obvious set of beliefs. You never get preachy, but it's very obvious to know who you voted for and what you believe in. You do it in a way that is positive as opposed to preachy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you know, I've got a big brother, and I look up to my big brother. I love him. You know, he's the wildest guy you'll ever meet. He is an outlaw biker, like a serious hardcore outlaw biker.
Wow.
And the biker community just doesn't see it the way I see it. Exactly. Right. I mean, there's things that we see, but there's certain things that we just don't see eye to eye. And I learned by having to, you know, continue to love my brother and speak to my brother and get along with him, that people just don't see it. You know, we don't all see it.
But that's okay. You don't have to all see eye to eye. You can express your beliefs. It's like, it's an interesting thing that we're going through now where you either have to be on my team or against me, which it shouldn't be that way. You can have opposing views and disagree with people, but it's just that the only way society moves forward is if we accept differences. You know, that's how this all started. But I know we don't have too much time with you left. So let's do the first questions and we'll wrap up with the plugs.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit's had sex.
The name of the show is, you know, is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We ask every rock star, every guest since the dawn of this show, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. And what we mean by that is the first concert you went to on your own volition that we're going to know, not some band we never heard of, but you said, I want to go see this band, and you went.
Yeah. So my first concert was, I believe it was the Cars.
That's awesome.
And the guys who sing Don't Fear the Reaper.
Blue Oyster Cult.
Yeah, it was Blue Oyster Cult. And then this was early 70s. So you can imagine, you know, Tom Petty was on that list amongst the first I'd ever seen. Eric Clapton. I got to see Led Zeppelin in my day.
That's great. Yeah.
I went to the ill-fated Tampa show. I believe it was Tampa, where it started to storm. It was in a stadium. And they only were out there for like 15 minutes.
Wow.
Really?
But yeah. Jimmy was not in the best shape. And so they decided to take a break because it started to storm in Florida. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, it storms in Florida all the time and it stops just as quick as it started, you know? But them being from London, or being from England, didn't, I think they wanted to get the hell off the stage. Honestly, I watched this damn helicopter go and take off behind the stage. Holy shit, that's them.
That sucks. Yeah. One of my friends has a program from Fillmore East here in New York City with Led Zeppelin as the opening band. He went to that show, which is pretty crazy. It was a long time ago. All right, now the first drug you ever did after pot, unless pot wasn't the first drug you ever did.
Toilet heroin.
Well, I started drinking in third grade.
Well, I mean, like your first drug, like after obviously alcohol is usually everyone's first. Okay, weed is usually everyone's second.
Yeah. So I started drinking third grade, my dad had a bar, and you know, we didn't have a great home life. So I started to drink his licorice flavored, I think it was called Galliano, this long, tall.
I know it. Yeah.
Liqueur that was yellow and tasted licorice. And I started drinking before I used to play basketball back in New York for, you know, my school. So before the game, I would get liquored up.
That's cool. That's funny. Galliano was, for some reason, that was a big drink in New York when I was a kid. It was a big, long, thin bottle.
Yeah.
It looked like piss, and it tastes like licorice.
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
And then when I got to Florida, that was during the Scarface era. So there was so much cocaine.
Sure.
Back in Miami. So I was living, I moved from New York down to Miami Beach, North Miami.
You were Miami, right?
North teenager, Miami. Right? You were a teenager when you moved there?
13, right after.
Oh, yeah. So just ready to do coke.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I walked into a buzzsaw, man, down in Florida with drugs and girls. There were really hot beach bunnies, you know, blonde haired beach bunnies. They were like, the Gentile girls.
You know what, by the way, only Jews would find this funny. I went to college in Albany and there was a newspaper in Albany called the Jewish Press, and it was right next to a tile store called the Gentile. So it was Gentile next to the Jewish Press. It was one of my favorite things. And also I grew up in North Miami as well, near Aventura, really? Turnberry, Jockey really? Club, holy that whole shit. Area. I was a spoiled white Jewish kid. What can I tell you?
Wow.
Yeah, so we missed each other by a few years, but I was there. And now, your first time having actual intercourse.
So, there was a girl that was the sister of my drug dealer. I'll just call her Annie Girl. She's so cute, Gentile, big blue eyes, blonde hair. And she was adorable, and she just kind of made me her boyfriend, you know?
That's and great.
That was.
How old were you?
15.
15. Well, okay. First
intercourse, but before that, I was getting blowjobs. At age 13, this is kind of gross, but we're having fun. So there was another girl who wanted to make me her boyfriend when I was like 14, 13, 14.
Well, giving you blowjobs is a good way to make that happen.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
So she was developed. Like, she had big boobs, and she was ready to go. She wanted to have sex. So we started going to this area that they were building tract homes, and we would go into the tract home that wasn't built up. And
that's when you got to be happy for mediocre architecture.
Yeah. So we lay down a blanket and we would have sex, but I couldn't come yet. So she's blowing me and I didn't know what to do. This is a terrible thing to admit. I felt something. So I just kind of gave it a shot. It wasn't calm. And she was like, whoa! And I went, oh, that was great. But I always felt really terrible about that.
So did she.
That was my first. Now, before that, when I was much, much younger.
Much younger than 13?
Yeah, when I was much, much younger. Again, I'm going to admit something to you, and I hope you don't think this is terrible.
No judgment.
Terrible. I had a girlfriend who lived across the street from me in Queens. Mm-hmm. And she was like 3 years older than me, but she became my best friend. I would draw, we would do sleepover dates, and she started to play doctor on me when I was a young child, but she wasn't much older. So that was my first experience with women and sex, but it was very innocent, and I dug it. I wasn't affected by it.
I think we all had something like that. I was like I was seven or eight, where the neighborhood girl would come over, and we'd like touch each other's things to see what's going on.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I had a scoutmaster that did that.
I loved her. Like, she was my best friend.
That's how it was too. Me and my neighbor, we were showing each other, you know, yeah, maybe you like know. Five, that, maybe.
Disgusted. That's just no, what you do.
You just didn't know at all.
You know, you're on your way to becoming an adult, and that's just the way it is. If you see it happen to your children, it's fine.
Yeah, you know there's a difference. You just don't know what it is. Right. And and all you want to do is learn at that age. It's amazing. Yeah,
and you've got this thing that's budding. It's developing, but it's not developed yet. But it's going to get there. Everybody's got that sex drive.
Oh, yeah, it'll become the monster eventually.
Exactly. And what you need to do is you got to make sure that your sex is beautiful and loving.
Mine is not.
Well, I'll give you credit, by the way, to put a nice button on it. You and your wife, I've not seen a happier couple in a long time. You guys look really fucking happy together. It's really nice to see.
We love each other and we get down almost all the time.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
Yeah, we make it a point because this is the point I was getting to is your sex is if you know, we have time now in this pandemic to go inwards and look inwards. Check your sex out, man. your sex has got a lot to do with who you are. You know, like, look at these crazy guys that are serial killers, you know. They have something seriously wrong with their sex. And they end up to be, you know, their sex is gross and they inside are
gross. Yeah, I can guarantee that no serial killer has ever had a strong, positive sex life that he was very content with. Never.
No, they're just trying to make zombie fucking sex slaves like Dahmer.
Yeah. So yeah, the new box said the glitz and the glamour. Yeah, we're going to wrap it up now on a positive note after we do that. In August, in theory, there's going to be a big orchestra experience with you, which I really hope will happen. I hope Lollapalooza comes back. That would be great. Thanks, as well. PerryFarrell.com for everything possible might be leading towards you, and the box set is available there. And what I like is that there's a couple of different vibes. Like, you get the regular one or get the deluxe one. There's various options there for that. Am I leaving anything out before we wrap this up?
No, I think we're good. Yeah, Ralph, Dave.
Honestly, dude, it's just a big honor. Dave, do your plugs real quick as we wrap this up.
Just go to DaveLando.com for all my shows and that kind of thing, whatever.
And Dave, our producer, Ani, you want to say anything? We'll allow you to speak for 10 seconds.
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ani_Moosh, and check out my website at AniMooshMedia.com.
Okay. Perry, it's been an honor. Really great to have you on. I mentioned this earlier. It's in the box set. I want to play Mr. Sunshine because I've been listening to that back and forth since we started to know you were going to be on the show. So we're going to add that to our playlist, thesdrshow.com/playlist.
Thank you. Can I tell you a quick story? Then we'll go.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So that album, I was taking bits and pieces from other people that I loved and admired their songs. Mm-hmm. And I would just take a line from it. And then I would write the whole song just using one of their lines. But of course, I had to ask permission. Mm-hmm. So I did go to the BG estate and ask. I told them I was writing a song like this and I had Jim Morrison's song. And so thankfully, they allowed me to do it. And I took the line, "Good morning, Mr. Sunshine. You brighten up my day." But they go, "Come sit beside me. Da, da, da." And the song is, "Lonely nights, lonely days, lonely nights. Where would I be without my woman?" So that line is taken from that song, but of course it became its own.
That's amazing. That's really cool. And by the way, if you haven't seen it, the Bee Gees documentary is incredible. It's worth watching if you haven't.
Yeah, I saw it.
What's it on?
Love the Bee Gees.
It was on HBO Plus. It's on HBO right now.
I'll watch it. I love it. Okay.
Yeah, people only think of them as a disco group, but boy, were they fucking talented.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Hey, listen, man, 70s Florida. I was wearing a leisure suit, like a satin leisure suit, trying to get laid in the discos, man.
That's
dressing how everybody in Bensonhurst was too.
All right, Perry, thank you so much. We'll see you next week on the SDR show. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton and my other podcast, the Health and Wellness Podcast called Good Sugar. Perry, thank you so much, man.
You got it. We'll be right back.